Welcome to the Compliance Perspectives Podcast. I'm Adam Turtletail from the Society of Corporate Compliance and Ethics and Healthcare Compliance Association. Joining us today from Knoxville is Goran Mushinovic. Goran is Vice President of the Realty Trust Group and co-author with Michael Honeycutt and Gregory Dean of Contracts with Referral Sources Real Estate Compliance for the Complete Healthcare Compliance Manual. Goran, thank you for taking the time to talk to us today.
Thank you, Adam. Glad to be here.
Our pleasure having you. And thank you again for writing for the manual. Now, we're going to talk about real estate transactions in healthcare. And when it comes to them, it can get very dangerous very quickly, with a lease of office space to a physician, for example, triggering a potential Stark Law violation. First, what are some of the basic requirements for a lease to pass muster?
Well, if the lease arrangement has triggered a Stark Law, typically the lease arrangement will have to be structured in compliance with the rental of office space exception under the Stark Law. And then generally speaking, without reciting verbatim the specific language under the rental of office space exception, the lease arrangement will have to comply with the following elements. First, the lease must be in writing, signed by all the parties, and must adequately describe the lease premises. The term of the lease must not be less than 1 year. The lease premises must not exceed that which is reasonable and necessary for the legitimate business purpose of the lease arrangement. The lease space must be used exclusively by the lessee. The rent must be set in advance and consistent with fair market value. The rental charges cannot be determined in a manner that takes into account the volume or value of referrals or other business generated between the parties. And the lease arrangement will be commercially reasonable if no referrals were made between the lessee and the lessor. So those are sort of the general elements of the rental office space exception. Again, I didn't recite the specific exception verbatim, but those seven, you know, general elements need to be satisfied whenever you're structuring a lease arrangement with a physician.
And those seven elements are definitely a good starting point because they're pretty clear and give some very strong direction. Let's start drilling down though a bit. What are some of the transactional compliance risks that compliance professionals need to be worried about?
Sure. So let's begin first by defining what transactional compliance is, at least the way we look at it. So as its name suggests, transactional compliance focuses on structuring the real estate arrangement itself correctly and in compliance with the applicable law. So we're talking about a real estate lease arrangement with a physician, for example. That means the lease arrangement satisfies the elements of the rental office space exception that we just discussed. So that's what we mean by transactional compliance. Now, there are also risks associated from a transactional perspective. And some of the most common transactional compliance pitfalls that we see involve rent rates, square footage measurements, operating expenses, tenant improvement allowances, and off-lease benefits. So kind of quickly touching on each of those, you know, when it comes to rent, the rent has to be consistent with fair market value. So that's one of the requirements that we mentioned as we were going through the requisite elements of the rent of office space exception. So first, the rent has to be consistent with fair market value. And when we say rent, it's not just the base rent, but you should also take into account, you know, rent escalators, rent abatements, and things of that nature. So rent is number one. Square footage is another potential transactional risk, and that's making sure that the size of the premises is accurate. So, you know, when you're trying to determine how much rent is going to be paid under the lease arrangement, the way that gets done is you multiply the rent rate by the square footage of the space. So the size of the premises and the square footage needs to be accurate. We also see some potential risks with tenant improvements and tenant improvement allowances specifically, and that's primarily from a commercial reasonableness perspective. You know, if a health system, for example, is investing significant money into improving the space for a short-term lease to the point where the tenant improvement might exceed the total revenue that's generated in the space. From that lease, that may create some issues from a commercial reasonableness perspective. Another issue is operating expenses, you know, determining what expenses should be included in the operating expenses. That also has to do with how the lease is structured, whether it be a triple net lease, a modified gross lease, a gross lease. And then finally, the other risks that we see are off-lease benefits. And that tip, what we mean by that with off-lease benefits is that, there are certain benefits that are being provided for under the lease, which aren't really specifically mentioned in the lease and are therefore not accounted for. So the tenant, referral source tenant, may be receiving certain benefits like medical waste removal services, parking and valet services, free telephone and internet, free meals, you know, things of that nature that the lease is silent on, and as a result are not accounted for when determining how much to charge the referral source there. So I know I, you know, spotted off a lot there, but I'm happy to discuss, you know, any.
Well, there's obviously a lot there that organizations need to be mindful of, and, you know, not to bog people down too much with sort of all the complexity, and the hard part is the lease itself is only the beginning. As I understand things, are compliance risk once the lease is in place, correct? I mean, what should compliance team be vigilant for in that area?
Yeah, you're absolutely right there, Adam. So we just talked about transactional compliance. And then, so in addition to transactional compliance, there's also what we call operational compliance. Now, operational compliance, focuses on the subsequent administration or lack thereof of a real estate lease arrangement. So structuring a lease arrangement properly and in compliance with the Stark Law is only half the battle. The proper administration of the lease arrangements is just as important. You know, a lease arrangement that is structured in perfect compliance with the healthcare regulations can easily expose healthcare providers to compliance violations if the arrangement is not properly administered. So common operational, compliance pitfalls that we see involve rent collections, operating expense reconciliations, space creep, lease expirations, and then for timeshare lease arrangements, time block and space adherence. So quickly touching on those, rent collections, as its name suggests, focuses on making sure that all amounts that are due and payable under the lease have been collected. That would include obviously the rent itself, making sure that the rent is properly escalated. If there's a rental escalator in the lease, which normally there will be if it's a lease with a term of a year or more, charging late fees. If a tenant fails to pay the rent on time, often the lease arrangement will impose certain late fees, and those need to be charged and collected. And then finally, holdover premiums as well. So pretty much, what the health systems and healthcare providers need to focus on is that they are collecting all amounts that are due under the lease arrangement, and often that doesn't happen. Operating expense reconciliation, similarly, if you're dealing with a triple net lease, which would be a lease where a tenant is paying a base rent and then a share of the operating expenses associated with that particular building, making sure that those operating expenses are reconciled and appropriately billed to each tenant. Space creep is another common issue that we see, and that, what we mean by that, and you'll have a lease that covers a specific space, and then over time, a tenant may start using additional space that's not covered by the lease at issue. So space creep is another issue that we see. Lease expirations, where a lease expires and is not timely renewed. We've seen situations where tenants will continue occupying space long after the lease for that space has expired. And then, as mentioned, when you're dealing with timeshares, the complicating factor there is that the tenant's not using the space full time. Typically they're supposed to be there on a set day and are supposed to occupy the space for a set period of time. And operationally, that can become a challenge, just making sure that the schedule is being adhered to, and that the tenants are not, using the space on, for longer periods than what's provided for under their timeshare arrangements.
There's obviously a lot of risk there. So let's look at how you can mitigate the risk. First, how do you get a good handle on an issue like fair market value?
Sure. Well, CMS does not prescribe any specific method for establishing fair market value and gives healthcare providers the right to use any commercially reasonable method to establish that the arrangement is consistent with fair market value. So CMS has actually gone so far as to say that healthcare providers are allowed to rely on internally generated analyses to establish fair market value, but has also noted those types of internal analyses may not have as much credibility as those procured from third-party valuation consultants. So to that end, most healthcare providers procure fair market value reports to establish rent rates. However, there's a significant variance in the quality of these reports. We've seen really good FMV reports that contain thorough analysis that address all material terms of the arrangement. And we've also seen some bad FMV reports that contain no analysis whatsoever and simply provide a rate without any backup. We've also seen a lot of instances where the quality of the fair market value report itself is good, but is not applicable to the lease arrangement in question, or it's incorrectly applied. So for example, the fair market value report may provide rates for a gross lease based on a rentable square foot basis, but the lease in question is a triple net lease with a usable square foot basis. So the way to mitigate these issues is to develop a real estate F&V policy, which will outline the qualifications of the valuation consultants, the requisite elements of each F&V reports, and establish a period of validity within which those reports can be relied upon. And after creating a real estate fair market value policy, the next step obviously is going to be to select the appropriate valuation consultant. Healthcare providers should select consultants who have experience valuing healthcare real estate, which is different than other types of real estate. And then finally, many health systems have started procuring what we call competitive market analysis reports, because that allows them to save money on fair market value reports, but still make sure that they're using rates that are consistent with fair market value. So a CMA is basically a large fair market value report, which provides fair market value rent ranges and other business terms based on typical lease arrangements per building. And it typically includes rates for multiple buildings in the health system's portfolio. The CMA also creates a mechanism under which it is easy and cheap to include additional properties in the CMA if they're acquired later, or procure more specific F&V reports if the lease arrangement in question deviates from a standard type of a lease arrangement that's entered in a particular building. So the combination of a CMA and the use of standard lease templates has, in our experience, helped health systems save significant money on fair market value reports without compromising compliance.
So finally, how do you ensure that you do the real estate equivalent of auditing and monitoring, which would not be just blindly renewing the lease, but looking at the renewal each time the right way to make sure that you're setting up an arrangement that's going to be in compliance?
Well, the best way to make sure this happens is to create a leasing policy and make it mandatory for real estate and property management departments or third-party providers like RTG to conduct regular walkthroughs and conduct annual lease audits before leases are renewed. Ideally, healthcare providers should implement systems and procedures which result in constant monitoring of lease arrangements, which would include, as mentioned, walkthrough of spaces, monthly reviews of rent rolls, and even establishment of real estate compliance committees, which would facilitate the communication between the relevant departments, which typically include real estate, finance and accounting, and then legal and compliance. One of the big issues that we see with various health systems is the creation of silos between different departments, which results in those departments not communicating with each other. So for example, a tenant may be behind on paying rent, but this information may only be known to the finance and accounting department. And if the finance and accounting department does not notify real estate and legal and compliance departments that a referral source tenant is behind on rent, they may not even be aware of there being a problem. And if they're not aware of there being a problem, how can they fix it? So creating an environment of open communication is critical. Other things that we have seen is the inclusion of automatic renewal provisions in lease arrangements. Although these automatic renewal provisions are often included to avoid situations where a tenant may be occupying space without a lease in place, they also tend to have a negative effect of making people have the mindset of, you know, set it and forget it. In other words, they start relying on the automatic renewal provision and not take the necessary steps of working on each renewal appropriately and making sure the rates for the renewals are consistent with fair market value and are commercially reasonable. And then other ways to make sure auditing and monitoring is taking place is to rely on technology and software. There are actually a number of different property management software platforms that can really help healthcare providers stay on top of all pertinent information related to various real estate lease arrangements with referral sources, such as, you know, rent collection, lease expirations, rent escalation dates, things of that nature. So that's worth looking at as well.
Well, it's good that there's a lot of tools there, but nonetheless, still a lot of risk for compliance people to take into consideration. Well, Goran, thank you and your colleagues for writing the article, Contracts with Referral Sources, Real Estate Compliance, for the Complete Healthcare Compliance Manual. I want to thank you also for taking the time to talk to us today. And finally, I want to thank all of you for taking the time to listen. I'm Adam Turteltaub from SCCE and HCCA. I hope we were able to expand your compliance perspective.